You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Today we're talking about first impressions, we're talking about attractiveness, we're talking about a study that was done between the United States and Turkey. Not between the two, but Turkey did the study and the United States did the study in order to determine if facial attractiveness was different across cultures. Now there are only two cultures, Turkey and the United States, but the results are kind of interesting. When we go to talk about, are there universal concepts such as facial attractiveness? What does that mean? Can somebody's looks deceive you? Or are they immediately telling you the truth about the person you're about to meet with or you're talking with? Should this be an interesting show?
Yes, like always.
Like always. So let's go on to first impressions. So, why do good-looking faces feel good so fast? Why instantaneously, when we see a good-looking face, do we also place on top of it a feeling of goodness? You know, oh, we see somebody, they're relatively attractive, and culturally, in Turkey and the United States, people think, oh, that person's good. Why? Is it real?
Some kind of signs in your face, they maybe recognize that.
So maybe gut instinct is a good way to judge people. Maybe it's a bad way. Maybe it's both. And we have to learn to tell the difference between when it's real and when it's not. I don't know if we're going to be able to teach that in this show.
Yeah.
But we have to have us recognize that the way someone looks sometimes biases us in favor or against them immediately without taking into consideration actual knowledge about that person. Are they conscientious? Are they trustworthy? Can you understand them when they talk? And I don't mean the words they use, but how they're saying things. Are they really disconnected with your reality? Can you feel bad for them? Do you have empathy? Can you be vulnerable with them? Sometimes our fast, initial, immediate conclusions based upon gut instinct is absolutely wrong, and sometimes it's right. We're going to talk about both, when it's right and when it's wrong, and why. I don't know if that's going to correct anything, but at least you'll know maybe you should trust your gut and maybe you shouldn't. At least give you something to think about. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So let's look at this. Across cultures, attractive faces get more positive feelings. And they get positive ratings from people, both in Turkey and in the United States. When somebody sees somebody who they believe is attractive, they give them positive ratings. That's what is beautiful is good. Beautiful is good. There's been a connection. Think about the movies we grew up with. Evil always had fangs and distorted faces and big noses or really small noses or witches with green skin. That when something was abnormal, not normal, not average, and again, good looks, this is another show we did a long time ago, but good looks turns out to be like really average, symmetrical looking features across cultures. You believe that?
Some part.
And I think what it is that we feel akin. We feel like when somebody is average, we don't feel that there's anything out of place, where when there is a difference, we start looking at that. And I think we even grow up, you know, as children, we're have a tendency to make fun of other people based upon looks that are a little bit out of the ordinary. And in fact, we make fun of people for the reasons that we just make fun of them, even if there's nothing wrong. And that's a bad thing, too. But let's continue on. an evolutionary note. Symmetry in somebody's face is a signal of maybe good genes, good DNA. This is a good person to mate with. Instinctually, you think, hey, if they are symmetrical, if their features are, quote, attractive, it's an innate signal to us that potentially, if we had offspring with them, they would also survive and be fit. So there is that built into it. So attractiveness, we may think someone's attractive, and is it a learned thing, or is it innate? And it's both, isn't it?
I guess that the first is can you approach this kind of person the first time? But I thinking for me, if I see somebody attractive, maybe I start to talk, but the talk is not good, I immediately say, okay. I have to do something.
I have to do my laundry.
Exactly, and I leave it.
Ooh, God. So, again, symmetry, clear skin, certain thinness or thickness, depending on, again, the Middle Ages, the wealthy were heavy, the peasants were skinny. So if somebody had a little bit of stout to them, they were a little bit sizable, oh, they had money because they could afford food. You know, or pale skin. Remember this, that in the old days, pale skin was a sign of, oh, they're wealthy, they don't have to work outside. Now, getting a tan is a sign that you took a vacation. You know? What the heck?
It depends the country and age.
So our brains automatically treat symmetry, clear skin, bone structure as green lights. And like, oh, I should proceed. So if you're on a dating app and you say, oh, look at that. Your gut instinct is partly because of your own preferences, but partly because of millions of years of evolution that have taught your DNA that this person's attractive because there's a good potential chance that you'll be able to have offspring. And you haven't even spoken with them yet. Wow.
It's natural instinct.
And the study shows that this is pretty universal across groups, whether it's Turkey, the United States, or other countries. This has also been shown in other studies that it's relatively universal, that symmetry, clear skin, certain things are universal signs of attractiveness. And I think there's some sense to that, is that if you're looking for a mate, you're looking for some stability, you're looking for something that you would think, oh, if I do get with this person, we're going to, you know, and maybe you're not thinking of it in your head, like in your prefrontal cortex, but maybe deep down in your primal soul, you know, your innate survival instincts are pushing up some kind of feeling like, I don't know why I'm attracted to this person, but, oh, they're the person for me. Until they start talking. How about compatibility pulls? So say somebody is a little bit less than average and you're not so attracted to them, but you share values and goals. What does that do? Is that like, well, you know what? This is an attractive trait where all of a sudden they become better looking. You ever notice that? Somebody who's nicer, somebody who is more compatible with you on things you like to do and on your values and goals, they become better looking over time? No?
Yeah. Or worse.
Or worse.
I think that. Morning when you wake up, you say, oh my God, what I did last night.
Well, the more compatible you are, the more you can let yourself go, right? So in a relationship, the closer you get together, the less you take care of yourself. That happens a lot of times. And is that the reason? Is that like now, hey, you love me for who I am, not what I look like, so I don't have to care as much. But that has also been the end of a relationship, too.
Yeah, so
evolutionary psychology looks how traits like attractiveness may have developed because of the survival instincts, the need for survival of a species and for reproduction. So that's what behavioral psychology looks for, or evolutionary psychology looks at. These are the types of things. Let's go on to the next subject. Oh, how about wide face? So there was a theory that people with wide faces were seen as a threat. So the height to the width, it was like a height to width ratio was looked at as what are the initial feelings when people looked at faces that had wider or taller structure? Mm-hmm. And the theory was wider faces would be seen as more threatening because they're more, more jaw, more broad brow, that was more threatening. You know what it turned out? That if the face was attractive, people didn't care. So attractive broad faces, that wasn't as scary as people thought. They were still, quote, attractive. So I think attractive has grown. And I think part of that is that as we've all become bigger people, we were just looking at the 1970s, groups of people in the 1970s, and I think they were all really thin. A lot of them were thin. Maybe their health habits were different. Maybe their food habits were different. Maybe what was in their food was different. Their lifestyles. They didn't have the phone just to sit at home all day. But you look at that and you go, maybe then somebody with this broad, wide face, oh, that's scary. But now there's a lot more, athleticism, right? The football players and the baseball players and sports figures of men and women both have more broadness to them. And that healthy aspect of athleticism may be getting itself into what we feel is good.
Yeah, but I guess it's suggestive because everybody's different and everybody has different tests, Maybe sometimes I say, oh, this person is attractive for me. People say, oh, my God, for me, it's no.
Yeah.
Between friends, we do that. I say,
that's true.
Yeah.
So we also ask that question, does your partner look like you? Do you have similar traits? So how far are their looks from your looks? So if you look at your symmetry and their symmetry, are there similarities in it? Are your eyes closer or further apart than average? Is your nose bigger or smaller? And does your partner exhibit those same traits? And it turns out that people are attracted. What do they say? Birds of feather flock together. People tend to have, not all the time, because they also say opposites attract. Until they don't. So.
Yeah, it's not formula. It's all variance.
Yeah, these are just studies. It doesn't mean that things are exactly this way. It means suggestion or percentages, tendencies.
Yeah,
these tendencies. Are tendencies. They're not absolute laws. Everyone is different. But when you have a large population and you can take information from them and people report on their own feelings, you get statistics, and these statistics give us data that we analyze and provide results for. How about this? Are we overreading bone structure as personality? Do we see somebody's face and facial features and we automatically attribute a personality to them?
Maybe.
Sometimes. Do you think that how we've grown up with movies and TV shows and cartoons, that we place personality on somebody based upon what we see, we have then a bias towards them, and then we see that personality come out because that's what we're looking for, and it may not be there. Yes?
Yeah.
And you think somebody who's treated that way may take on that personality because that's how they see themselves as well. So we can program people to act in certain ways because that's what, quote, society expects. And that's when you talk about, is that a social norm rather than innate survival instinct? Is that something that, is a learned behavior, that this structure was learned by movies and TV, reinforced by that, and part of it was based upon instinct, but then it's just really overdone with movies?
Yeah.
What else? So that was some of the study from Turkey and the United States. Is attractive the same as trustworthy?
This is a good point. You can be attractive, but maybe not trust. Some people feel attraction for not trust.
Interesting that you say that. So I believe that every beautiful woman, you have to trust 100%, but only 50% of the attractive guys.
I like your objective.
Objective. Very objective. It's not subjective at all, right? The point would be is that we do tend to trust, for whatever reason, attractive people instantly. or more so, or more likely than somebody who's unattractive. However, over time, I think personality wins, is that when you have a connection with somebody and you contact them and discuss things, that the consistency of their behavior slowly programs how you feel about them, and then looks doesn't matter anymore, right? They don't. The looks don't matter anymore. Is that true? Okay. In a relationship science, in studies, they look at these two things. They look at partner choice often splits into warmth and trust, that's what I'm looking for, versus status and looks. That, oh, I'm looking for warmth and trust in the attractiveness. So when I'm looking for what attracts me, warmth and trust versus status and looks. So if you see how, you know, you could say, oh, status and looks is superficial and warmth and trust is deep and heart and heartfelt.
It depends, again, the people, what they're looking for, what it feel priority, you know?
That's true. So when you meet somebody for the first time in a relationship, are you looking for safety or are you looking for spark? Not now, I don't want you to be going out looking for anybody, but like in the past, what do you think?
I guess that I hear something about the woman looking for more safety.
Okay.
So one need protection, so and so deep, and so if you don't feel protective, maybe you don't feel attraction.
And guys, what I'm being told by my programming is that, oh, you look for spark. You need to have the chemistry, right? That you're not looking for safety. I'm not looking for a woman to make me feel safe. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking for a partner to make me feel safe. I can do that for myself. What I want is a spark. And people grow up, and they may be taught this as well by movies and books, is that the man's always looking for the spark and the woman's looking for safety. However, some of these books are, you know, romance books. They're both looking for spark. They don't care about safety. In fact, they're looking for the most danger possible. I want a dangerous relationship because it's fun.
Yes, exciting. It's exciting, yeah.
So that's why we play with machetes blindfolded sometimes, because we want a dangerous relationship.
You see how many fingers we lose in the game.
So we're going to take a break right now. And when we come back after our machete break, we'll talk more about attractiveness.
Once upon a time, there was a couple and a newborn baby. Or should I say, a single mum. This brave young lady left her 9-to-5 job to follow her passion and started a consulting business. Her friends helped out. She traveled the world, met new people, and again came home. The woman dated to find a man who would fill her life and fit her plan. She met a guy who checked out ladies. That burned her up. That made her crazy. Other guys were full of verve. Into their self. No room for her. And one time she met a man with patch over eye and axe in hand. Then one day she had enough. Her little boy was all grown up, tired of attracting the wrong type of guy. It was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. We're here at Inglenook at Francis Ford Coppola's new winery. Well, they've had it for a few years, but this is his library, books that he has read over the years that have accumulated in his knowledge. Here we have 90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and Jim Gulnick. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about attractiveness and our biology and evolution and how that affects the way we see other people. This is something that I find astounding. Are women more tuned to looks than men? So, you know what I mean? Are they more looking? And here's it. U.S. data is that attractiveness effects were stronger for a woman or women than men. So women were more compelled by how attractive the man was than the man. And I think if you look at the data we had from the apps, if you remember, that 50% of the men would basically swipe right for 90% of the women. So like 50% of the men would like, oh, she's nice, she's nice, she's nice, she's nice. Whereas on women, it was something like 90% of the women would only select 10% of the men. That the women were more selective in choice. Now, we talked about this earlier today. Mm-hmm. Women have the ability to, I guess men do too, but, you know, do their hair nicely, makeup, how they wear their clothing and stuff. And men are always just men. You know, they some of them may do that. Some may do their hair nice. Some may, but what you see is what they are. Whereas with women, you know, a relatively attractive woman with makeup, if you're interested in women, an attractive woman with makeup can look more attractive, and that's why makeup is used, because if they looked less attractive with makeup, it wouldn't be used, or it's just really marketed well, one of the two. So my feeling is that, you know, generally speaking, men find, you know, the average man finds many women attractive, and apps have shown that 50% of the men have swiped right on 90% of the women. That may be a number that's a little bit off, but it's generally that way, whereas the women are much, much more selective, that the top men get all the likes and the average men get almost none. That's what these apps show, which means, and we talked about this before, these attractive men create a reputation for all other guys of, oh, you can't trust guys, because these attractive men get all the women and they get all the women at once. So they're playing the field and they're ruining the reputation of all men because they're attractive. And it's all the women's fault for picking them. This is a little bit of a spoof, but it's true in many aspects. And this is where you get all these people upset about men. You get men upset because they can't find dates with women. You get, there's no good men left. You get, there are no women that are looking for just the good guy, you know. Good guys finish last. You hear those things. Turkish data is similar, that the women have more of, they're more impacted by the man's looks than the men are. Who notices first? Who uses it more cautiously? What does this mean? Are women tuned to looks? Who notices the other person first? So you walk into a room. Who notices the other person first? Like here's a bunch of singles, they're at a party.
Yeah, the people don't have the phone because everybody's distracted with the phone. No, not everybody.
Hey, are you here at the party? Here I am taking a selfie.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
No, so that's and a question is, how have things changed? You know, oh, everyone's okay dating multiple people now. I'm not saying everyone is, sorry. Some people are a little bit more open. And yeah. Does that change how looks in now? Is it more just feeling emotionally, I want to be connected to people. Mm-hmm. What else do we have here on this? Oh, what stays universal and what's cultural? So what are universal aspects of attractiveness versus cultural? So the attractiveness of the wider face versus the taller waist. The ability to speak is attractive. If I can't speak, my wife is like, what are you talking about? So in both cultures, it was similar impact of facial width to height. And again, we talked about the attractiveness trumped all that. That the more attractive the face, the less the width versus height ratio impacted the study. Looks mattered in both gut and deliberate ratings. Oh, this is going to be interesting. Turkish sample, mainly deliberate ratings. So, culturally, I must ask you, for women in Venezuela, if you can represent all of them for the moment, are looks important in a relationship?
What is more important?
No, what is important? Are looks. Is the attractiveness of the guy important?
Yeah, yes, of course.
What else, though? I mean, is that more important than
something else? So we have some culture that they take care so much, and the way they use a lot of products, you know, the Miss Universe, so the woman need to take care from 10 years old, whatever it is, how it looks like, and the men, too. So the man also has to be clean, attractive, good.
Surgery, like me?
Yes. And they remove the hair.
Remove the hair to be attractive to a woman like you?
Yeah.
Okay, I got it.
Yeah, and then I guess the personality. So if you see a person that is secure, is good spoken, and then connecting with people, is attractive person.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective, it's been too long ago since I was attracted to anyone but you, so I can't give my opinion.
Okay, good.
Is that a good answer?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's my answer for the moment. So here's another one. Do we judge differently when asked to versus when feelings are leaked in? And what I mean by that is, if you're just on an app on a phone, let's just pretend we're single for a moment, and you're just swiping right or swiping left, is that different than if someone asks you to answer them before you swipe right or swipe left? Is that person attractive? So if I'm looking at my phone and I'm just swiping right and swiping left, I will pick a certain number of people. If somebody asks me to tell them is that person attractive or not before I swipe right or left, it turns out that we are more harsh of a judge verbally and consciously than we are subconsciously. That if you're quickly swiping right and left, you tend to put more in your good basket when you are letting those emotions automatically come to you. But when you're thinking about it, you are more judgmental. So we put more judgment in consciousness than we do in subconscious. And it could be that biology is telling us you want to find somebody, but your mind is saying, no, not them, because they're bad this way, or I don't like the way that they look that way, and I don't like the color of their hair, and I don't like that they're bald. I want them to be bald. That when you are having to give a conscious decision, we tend to be more judgmental. And I think that's partly because we add more of our cultural and societal filters on top of what innately we would select as an animal.
Yeah.
So that's where social constructs trump innate survival instincts. Attractiveness had stronger impact when people deliberately rated faces. That was the study, and that was summarizing what I just said, is that when you deliberately had to rate a face, it more impacted your decision. That you either, if you found them attractive, you found them more attractive, and if you didn't find them that attractive, you would put them in that basket of now they're not attractive. And again, we are more favorable when we weren't consciously or deliberately having to state whether they are attractive or not. Takeaway. There we go. So the takeaway is dating apps are especially influenced by intentional ratings. That when you're intentionally looking for someone good looking rather than you're just doing a quick gut feel is more accepting than our critical mind. What else do we have here? This is the next slide, which is, are gut reactions more sweeter? Are they sweeter than deliberate ones? Our gut reaction is sweeter. That our gut, naturally, we tend to find more people attractive than we do consciously. And that's a very interesting thing, that we judge people more harshly in our conscious mind.
And maybe it's because we have more information. So I guess at the moment that and happy for me. So you can have some attractive guy from you, but and then they just start to share more information, the attraction, or maybe become better because you connect different other stuff.
I can see that. So how about this? This is a statement. When we're not focused, we're more generous. If you're doing something else and you're watching TV and you're on your app, you tend to be more generous. So one of the things that would be interesting to do is take a set of photos, 100 photos, and get with a friend of yours and rate them quickly, that you have to rate all 100 in 1 minute, just quickly, versus you get longer time to deliberately look at and then tell your friend attractive, non-attractive, and then see how those numbers change. That was an example. Let's see what else we have. Oh, can we outthink our snap judgments? Which is one of the things. Again, consciously, we change what our snap judgment is. That when you have attention, explicit attention to detail, you'll come up with a different result than when you just aren't really thinking that deeply about something. So, also, the cues that dominate our mind, what we are thinking about when we look at somebody to see if they're attractive, changes if we focus. When we focus, the cues we're looking for become different. We may say, oh, now I'm really looking at their ears. I'm looking at something other than just a general quick overview of how they look. I'm now getting really picky. And you're right, maybe we get pickier. And maybe that is stopping us from finding someone attractive, and they haven't even spoken to us yet, and we haven't spoken with them yet. And again, we talked about values, right? Values and goals being something that connects people. Is that sometimes you need to just have a quick judgment, but start talking to them about values and goals. See where they are, because maybe as you talk to them, I've found that when somebody matches you in your values and goals, they become more and more attractive because you start connecting in ways well beyond just physical. You start getting mental connections, spiritual connections. You can really connect well. And like Lizette and I, that the more we're together, the more we're connected, the more attractive we each get. Can attention style differ by culture? Attention, like what are you paying attention to? The style that we pay attention to, can that differ by culture? For instance, we use an analytic style when we focus on parts of the face. That's what Westerners do, versus Eastern and Middle Eastern cultures may use more holistic. They may sum up the whole person. They may look at the body type. They may look at the shoulder width. They may look at the height of the neck and the head versus just facial features. This may also explain a little bit of the differences. There were some little differences between the USA and Turkey, that we do have cultural differences that do leak into what we find attractive. Again, the United States versus Latin America versus other country, that we do. We have the biological piece, we have the cultural piece, but we also have, you know, evolutionary psychology and biology that are in different regions, that your group could have been in an area for 10,000, 20,000 years, separated from this other group, so you can have differences. That even though there's a lot of similarities, because they're survival similarities, there can be differences in what your culture finds similar.
Once upon a time, there was a couple and a newborn baby. Or should I say, a single mum. This brave young lady left her 9-to-5 job to follow her passion and started a consulting business. Her friends helped out. She traveled the world, met new people, and again came home. The woman dated to find a man who would fill her life and fit her plan. She met a guy who checked out ladies. That burned her up. that made her crazy. Other guys were full of verve, into their self, no room for her. And one time she met a man with patch over eye and axe in hand. Then one day she had enough. Her little boy was all grown up, tired of attracting the wrong type of guy. It was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
We're here at Inglenook at Francis Ford Coppola's new winery. Well, they've had it for a few years, but this is his library, books that he has read over the years that have accumulated in his knowledge. Here we have 90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and Jim Gulnick.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about attractiveness. Now, the reason I said I hope you stick with us, and there was a reason for that, is because this is the next part. Does initial attractiveness have any play into does the person stay with you or do you stay with them? Does initial spark between two people predict staying? What do you think? Does the initial spark that you have predict, are you going to stay with that person? Are they going to stay with you?
No.
I would say no. I would say that it's a way to meet somebody. It's a way to, connect. But then all those other things have to connect as well. Attractiveness pulls attention. You know, so you have the attention of someone. They have the attention of you. You're connected together. But long-term bonds rely on, we talked about this before, warmth and trust. Mm-hmm. So warmth and trust, more important than looks and class long-term. They may all have an impact. Alignment of goals, alignment of values is another thing that predicts long-term connection. So how about the triune brain? If you remember, we talked about the spark is the limbic system. It's the emotional part of it, but it goes deeper than that, because we always talk about the spark being like reptilian, which is the chemical innate animal in us, that there's that initial push, and then that boils over into the limbic system, into the emotional side, and then we have those emotions of the initial spark. And then when we start sharing plans with our attractive partner, that is the goals part. We're looking at goals and values and we're sharing them. And when we have shared goals and values and we build new information together, we talk about that on that show and on this show all the time. Shared goals that allow you to build brain connection together connects you in more ways than you can ever imagine. That you get neuroplasticity, you get the brain growth, you get the neurons, you get the synapses, you get those things aligning with your partner. You never had them before. You met, you were two different brains. As you share goals and plans and build things together, you're building connections in your brain similarly to your partner, and you start being able to communicate with them in a way you cannot communicate with someone else. But you have to be vulnerable. You have to have empathy. You need to trust them and understand them, and them with you as well. And when that happens, you start building this magnet, this brain magnet, this, and how we think. I don't know if you're aware of how we think, but our thoughts are all over our brain. I have come up with this fourth dimensional theory of the brain, is that we've got all these little neurons firing, we've got these ions, we've got these positive negative charges running around as these things are firing in our brain, and we've got in an electrical circuit, when that happens, you get a magnetic lines of flux that surround them, and those things can trigger other things within our brain as well. And when you have multiple synapses going off at one time, you basically have this fourth dimension of thought. That, and this is not just inside your cells, but it's around your cells. And if that's true, if it's true, and I can have these thoughts, and my wife can have these thoughts, and we're connecting, can my thoughts leak over into her brain because we have this fourth dimensional thinking? Now, it may sound like a weird theory, but let's pretend it's true for a moment and just think of how wonderful it would be if it is. And it can explain the connection that two people can have over time as they build a life together, they build goals and values together. There's this thing that connects them more than just can be explained by two people growing. Spiritual? Fourth dimensional thinking, whatever you like.
We enjoy so much when we laugh in some topic.
We do.
And we get it without a lot of explanation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you look at your partner and just know what they're thinking, mm-hmm. and you have no idea at the same time, it's great.
It's tension and quiet.
So what we want to do is coach people, right, to understand that the spark starts the relationship. Safety sustains it. Sharing sustains it. Common goals and values sustain it. We talked a few episodes ago about couples therapy, where the big four things are trust, understanding, empathy, and vulnerability. That if you can understand how those four things are connected and work together, and you can work towards that, and it's tough, because in past relationships, I couldn't connect all those things. With Lizette, I'm able to. She's beaten me into empathy. And I trust that she'll stop when I say pineapple.
And be vulnerable with
her. And be vulnerable. So the point of that is that in all seriousness, is that being vulnerable, allowing your partner to hear how you're feeling, you've got, in order to do that, you've got to trust that they're going to react with empathy. And the only way you can do that is by understanding them. And that's getting to know them really well. And it's hard to do that at the beginning of a relationship. But as you build that common set of values and goals together, and you build that common brain, like we talked about, by sharing things that you do together, building together, it creates that connection that allows you to have that. Yes?
Yes.
All right. What else do we have? We have, how to build trust when looks fades. Take your glasses off. So there was this nice little short thing from Modern Family. Jay and Gloria, if you guys are familiar with this, Jay and Gloria are hanging out together. Jay gets Gloria a new set of glasses. She puts them on and she's like, whoa, those lines. And he's older, of course, and he takes the glasses back off her and is like, you don't need those. So they joke about she's not going to wear her glasses, so she's not going to see as well, and he's not going to get hearing aids, and they're going to have a wonderful life together. Is that you got to know what are the things that keep you together, and you need to know the things to ignore that would irritate you and push you apart. And we talked about this today when we were hanging out. My wife and I were hanging out today, which is, what are the 95% of things that you love about your partner? Focus on those. Those 5% of things that annoy you, ignore them. I was already to the ignore part. Ignore the things that annoy you.
What?
As soon as you start focusing on the things that annoy you, those things will start to go from 5 to 10 to 20. They grow like weeds. We got to be conscientious about the things that are wonderful, and we need to take away those things that are terrible. It means you can talk about them, But if you keep focusing on something, a habit your partner has that they've had since they were a child, and you're like, well, that's terrible, and you make fun of them, it's never going away. It's just going to build resentment. So again, what are important items? What are things that are irrelevant and are just going to become things to get in the way of a beautiful relationship? And so I have no idea of anything Lizette does that annoys me, because she doesn't do anything that annoys me. I do things that annoy her, and I know it. I'm absolutely sure of that. However, I know that, and I apologize, and we move on. I have understanding of what I do that annoys her. That's part of those four things. Understand.
Yeah, and this is your attribute that you have.
Can empathy override pretty privilege? Empathy. The beautiful equals good stereotype is real, right? So beautiful equals good stereotype, it's a real thing. People do this. Oh, they're beautiful, they're good people. Can empathy and understanding override this? When you start listening to somebody, you start talking to them, and you're looking for the empathy. Can that, well, like say I'm not as pretty as this other guy. Can my empathy towards a woman or towards a man, towards whomever, make me more attractive than somebody who's, quote, better looking? Can my connection of empathy, can empathy be a trait? And I think in the complex human psychology that we have today, the things we know, the ability, language, remember, a million years ago, supposedly, there's no language. 20,000 years ago, there's no language. So we don't have these complex thoughts and communications that get in the way of true emotion and true connection. So can empathy and the ability to do this communication overcome somebody being, quote, pretty? And I believe the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Somebody that you have a deep connection with, that you have empathy with, that you have vulnerability with, that you have trust and understanding with, becomes the most good person in comparison to someone who only looks good. In fact, I think as time goes on, people who look good may start coming down in notches as to, well, if they look good, that means they get away with these things, which means their personality has become this. Not all people, but some. They use their looks for privilege. And because of that, their personalities, instead of becoming one of empathy, becoming one of understanding, becoming one where they can share things with people, they are bitter, or they're angry, or they feel, oh, people are just after them because I'm so good looking, that's why people are approaching me. And they become...
No, you know? So the other day we have the discussion that we see people right now is over 65, 70 years old, and was so attractive when was younger.
Yes.
And right now it's alone people, so don't have a partner, don't have a family, because sometimes this is spoiling the people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this tool is not powerful.
So instead of becoming better looking as you get older, focus on becoming better as a connector with someone else. Yeah. Focus on your ability to, with your partner, with friends, with relatives, focus on how do I connect with them? How do I listen? Because that is what is attractive. As we learn more about each other, the person that we want to be with is somebody who wants to be with us, not based upon how we look or how they look, but based upon the connection, the deep connection that we have with them. So that's our actual goal of today's show, is to understand that attractiveness is one of the keys to initially finding somebody. And what attractiveness is to you and what it's to me can be completely different. But long term, for all of us, attractiveness is our ability to connect with each other through understanding, trust, empathy, and vulnerability, whether it's your romantic partner, whether it's your friends, whether it's your family. That's the goal. Hope you can do it. We'll try better ourselves. Thank you for watching 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Have a great week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.